And hello, thank you so much for joining me. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and as always, we're wishing you the best. We'd love to hear from you. It's so exciting for me to hear from listeners all over the country and the world. It's amazing how far Progressive Radio Network reaches, and that's PRN.FM. And we also have a call-in line if people want to get us by phone rather than through an online access venue. So we're definitely getting the word out there, and we love it. And we love when you get the word out there and get in touch with us. You can join us on ground as well as by webinar, by going to naturalnurse.com and click on calendar on the top. You'll see all the up-and-coming events. We had a lot of people last week on a webinar we did called Herbal Product Marketing, Legal Implications. There were hundreds of people from all over the country and perhaps the world on that call to find out if that's something they want to pursue in terms of putting out something like herbal extracts or herbal salves. We have an on-ground one coming up where we're going to spend the day outside gathering edible and medicinal plants and making them into medicine, and that's going to be on the campus of Hippocrates Health Institute. Many of you are familiar with Hippocrates. It's in West Palm Beach in Florida, a beautiful place, and we'll be there for the day, a totally organic homegrown lunch is included, and we'll be out in the field gathering wild plants and making your own medicine, and you will go home with your medicine. So that's another up-and-coming one. We have many classes going on for nurses and other professionals where you get CE credits, and several of those are coming up in the next few weeks and months. We have one in December on Cycles of Life, Herbs for Women, which is based on one of the many books that we've written. That book is called Cycles of Life, and that is an online webinar that you can participate in for your own knowledge or for three CEU credits from anywhere in the world. So to find out more, go to naturalnurse.com and click on calendar. Today, we are so happy to have as our guest Regina, and that is Regina Lausell. Regina, at a young age, was diagnosed with autoimmune disorders, and she triumphed over many wellness hurdles, which she will share with us. Now, she is sharing awareness and the more esoteric revelations she's discovered after decades of focused research and personal care. She has a BFA in interior design and an MFA in architectural lighting. Regina designs for both visual and non-visual aspects of architectural lighting to support well-being through inner physiology and outer physical comfort within each space. While working as a lighting designer and CEU educator, researching the topic of light and health grew into a beloved hobby, and this practice literally changed her life. Using her background in marketing and communication for a state regional planning council, Regina focuses on her efforts in light wellness towards educating communities and business owners at large about the benefits of infusing health-driven lighting strategies into their daily lifestyle and the fabric of local businesses. The name of her organization is Light Vitality Group. Thank you so much for joining us today, Regina.
Thank you so much for having me, Ellen. This is such an honor, and I'm really excited to be able to share this information on your platform.
Well, very recently, you presented, and I did as well, at a wonderful organization which is called the Wellness Naval Expo, and people can find out more at navalexpo.com, and those naval expos go on all the time. What was the topic you presented on at the Naval Expo a couple weeks ago?
The Naval Expo topic was kind of a high-level overview of a lot of what we'll discuss today, but it was called, What's the Big Deal with Healthy Light? And it just talks, or I talked to individuals about what light wellness was, how it's associated to our circadian health and our overall wellness, and some of the means and methods that we use within the lighting industry in order to support our circadian health.
Well, that's the outline of our show. There you go. Mm-hmm. So go back in time a little bit, Regina, and tell us about your autoimmune issue, how that came up, and how you used it rather than, you know, as something that put you down, you used it as something that made you evolve.
Yeah, you know, one day I was hanging out with a friend. I was 9 years old. I was hanging out with one of my friends at her house, and my hand just blew up. It started swelling. It hurt really, really bad. And, you know, I went home, and my mom put my hand down on the table, and she took one finger and tried to push my hand down flat onto the table, and I just started screaming. And she knew immediately that it wasn't a bug bite, that there was something going on. So she took me to the doctor, and we found out that I had juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, or JRA. And over the course of about a 3-month period, the arthritis moved every few days from joint to joint. So one day it would be in, you know, my left hand and my right elbow, and then the next day it could be in my left knee and my right ankle, and it just started moving and filtering to all different parts of my body. And at one point, the doctors had said, you know, please, like, if this hits her spinal cord, this is so serious that she could potentially never walk again. Now, I was a very active little girl. I was a soccer player. You know, I had a lot of activity in my life. I'm the youngest of 6 kids, so I was always roughhousing with my siblings, and that was kind of devastating to hear. And then about 2.5 months into you know, being diagnosed, it struck my hips, and I became immobilized, and the next step would have been my spine, but fortunately, it didn't wind up reaching my spine, and it just dissipated. It went away, and over time, I just kind of had phantom, you know, illnesses or inflammation over the next kind of few years. I developed asthma, a couple of skin conditions. For a while, I thought that I might have fibromyalgia. I have a, you know, family history of having fibromyalgia. So there were definitely a lot of peculiarities in my autoimmune health that led me to just feel not well on a regular basis. And there wasn't, you know, any medication that I could use. I couldn't use anything strong as a little girl. So I mainly just used ibuprofen as an anti-inflammatory. And eventually, I learned to just kind of deal with the pain and tailor my nutrition into what I ingested into something that could basically be medicine for my body. So from the time I was, you know, 9 and 10 years old, I just started looking at more kind of natural, holistic means to care for myself. And both of my parents were pharmacists. They're retired now, but they were very aware.
Slow down one little minute.
Yeah, absolutely.
I haven't noticed any discussion by any of the doctors in terms of what were you eating at the time and what brought on, what kind of stress were you under that brought on this juvenile arthritis, or had you been on any, let's say, antibiotics beforehand?
No, you know, they said they didn't know where it was coming from. They said that at the time it was very misunderstood. Now this was, you know, over 2 decades ago now, so there wasn't a lot to be known. They did tell me that there were about over a dozen cases of children who had come in over the course of 2 weeks that were diagnosed with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. So they had no idea how it was being spread, why it was happening, but their only conclusion was that it could have been in some way ingested through water, or it could have potentially been airborne, or somehow it could have just been spread from child to child. So those cases continued to grow in my hometown. Now, as an adult, after much research, I've come to understand something called Epstein-Barr virus, or EBV. And this is much more newer research, and wasn't exactly where I was planning on going with this conversation, but basically Epstein-Barr virus creates, it's a virus that manifests as autoimmune disorders. So it's not an actual autoimmune disorder. The symptoms of EBV manifest as autoimmune conditions, and they can come and go.
Well, you know, there are tests. There are viral titers as well as high monocyte counts that do indicate the presence of that specific kind of virus, which is Epstein-Barr virus. So did they test for that?
No, they didn't. Not yet. And from my understanding of EBV, and I'm sure that you can talk, you know, more to this, is that there are instances when the body is under more stress and has higher levels of toxins or negative hormones within, that the virus comes out of dormancy and starts to activate and take over these different areas of your body and manifest as autoimmune conditions. And when your body is healthy and well, the levels of EBV can be very low to the types of levels that you see existing in individuals who have previously had mono or a mononucleosis, which is also a strain and a form of EBV. So anyone who's had mono can technically test positive for EBV in very low doses and levels, but the types of levels that you need to reach in order to manifest into autoimmune responses or disorders are much higher. And unless the body is under a lot of stress, you're not going to see those levels increase. So I personally have been maintaining a very healthy body over the years. So I haven't actually gone and gotten tested for it yet, but it's definitely on my next step of things to do when I feel that my body is ready for it.
Okay, well, maybe. I mean, if you're feeling so much better now, you probably would no longer have elevated levels, but at the time it would have been an appropriate test. So you
exactly.
had that health struggle, and how did you work your way out of it?
Honestly, it just went away one day, and as I, you know, grew up and I started reading more articles about nutrition, I just started eating foods and listening to my body on the types of foods that made me feel well and the types of food that made me feel sick. And I'm very in tune to my body, so it was very easy for me to differentiate which of those foods helped and which of those didn't. I was that weird kid that loved eating vegetables and fruits and really healthy things. I avoided lots of sugars and carbohydrates and things.
Now, why did you do that? Where did you get, you know, some kind of information saying that that might be a good idea?
Just reading general health websites and magazines, reading tons of articles and just researching over time. I'm a natural resource or researcher. I can't point specifically right now to any one resource over another, but just every single day I found myself being an avid reader and an avid researcher, and any time I felt a little sick, I would go in and type into the computer, which we can do in this day and age. I go to Google and search, you know, what these types of symptoms are and which foods and what type of nutritional values and vitamins I would need to use in order to heal or to take care of whatever I was experiencing, and I'd start infusing those into my diet. There was just a long-term kind of research effort, always looking into whatever ailed me.
And you got results. And, you know,
yep.
That's very encouraging. When you try something like changing your diet, eliminating junk food, which is really, you know, a project for some people, because sometimes they just eat whatever's there and they're not really paying attention, and they certainly have no association in their mind about how they feel with what they're putting in their mouth. But very often when you have a health challenge and begin to search, what can I do about it, you decide to give something like healthy eating a try. And what's amazing is that you do experience an effect, and sometimes pretty quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen in cases, you know, eating things like pineapple, you know, iron-rich supplements have been very critical for me. Just a lot of different types of fruits and vegetables that have anti-inflammatory agents I try to keep into my diet. And, of course, reducing the amount of sugar. You know, the moment that doctor said she might not be able to walk again, I was like, nope, that's not happening. I need to do whatever I can in order to make sure that I'm well. And so food became, you know, a critical component of that.
Well, that's an excellent story. Now, that has to do with health and wellness, but how are we going to transition into the concept of healthy life?
Well, you know, growing up my whole life being interested in health and wellness, that was really just more for myself and taking care. And my enjoyment growing up at that time when I was, you know, stuck in the house and I couldn't go outside when I was feeling sick was I always rearranged my room. And I would move my dresser here and scoot my bed there and change all of the decor. And, you know, one day I said, you know, I'm going to try interior design, interior architecture. And I went to school for that. And then, you know, I graduated in 2008 with my BFA in interior design, and that was when the market completely dropped out from below us. So I wound up landing a job as a marketing coordinator and a graphic designer for a state-governed regional planning council. And I stayed there for about 4 years until I decided to go get my master's in grad school. And I entered an architectural lighting program, and one day I stumbled into a light and health seminar. And I was like, well, this is interesting. Like, how I love health and I love light, otherwise I wouldn't be in this master's program. So let me just see what this is all about. And after about 30 to 45 minutes of listening to, you know, to Philips, the lighting manufacturer, talk about some of the strategies that they were using to support circadian health through light wellness and to tackle things like seasonal affective disorder and Alzheimer's, or what most people refer to as seasonal affective disorder as SAD, it just completely blew my mind. I started putting the associations together and thinking about all of the issues that I had and all of the issues that people I've spoken to with health have had. And I thought, oh my gosh, this could literally change the world. And I put my planning cap on from the state planning council, and I put my health and wellness cap on from, you know, all of these years of taking care of myself, and now with this new lighting cap that I was wearing, I just merged all three and started researching it and investing in it and just became completely enthralled and in love with it and made it my life's work. So, yeah.
Oh, so you were led there on a path.
Absolutely, absolutely. And light wellness, you know, when we say light wellness is a broad term for how lighting strategies are used to support our health and wellness. More specifically, for the purpose of this conversation, I'll focus on how one spectrum of light over another influences our circadian health, because our bodies require a very specific wavelength or a few wavelengths of light, which can be both...
I want you to define, because not everybody may know what circadian health means. I do, but can you tell our listeners what you mean by circadian health?
Yeah, absolutely. So circadian rhythms are physiological processes that run on approximately or around 24 hours and are driven by an internal circadian clock. They've been widely observed in humans, plants, animals, fungi, and even bacteria. And they can be measured and modified through external cues such as sunlight and temperature. Now, virtually every organism that's been studied demonstrates a day-to-night difference in activity that's mediated by an androgynous timekeeping system, more commonly referred to as our internal clock. Now, this is possible because circadian rhythms are regulated by small nuclei in the middle of the brain called the suprachiasmatic nuclei. And these nuclei, or the SCN, and these nuclei act as control centers. And there's a pathway that runs from the eyes to the SCN, and every specific wavelength of visible light, and very specific wavelengths of visible light, have been found to play the largest role in setting the mammalian internal circadian clock. And because of this, sunlight and other light profiles are used to keep our clocks set from day to day. Now, the term circadian comes from the Latin circa, meaning around, and diem, meaning day. And as mentioned before, our rhythm is set to around a 24-hour period, or approximate, or, you know, 24.2 hours to be more precise. And daylight runs on a 24-hour basis. So therefore, if we receive the wrong type of lighting at the wrong time of day, we can begin to phase shift our rhythms every day about 0.2 hours or 15 minutes. And the more we phase shift our rhythm, the more misaligned it becomes, impacting our overall well-being. So a good way to look at this is the circadian rhythms of a healthy person are in tune with your body like the many instruments within an orchestra. If even one chord or one rhythm is out of sync with the others, it throws the whole performance off, meaning if one rhythm is thrown off, the chain reaction begins to occur over a long-term period of time, potentially causing very serious yet very preventable health conditions. And because of this, light profile management on a daily basis becomes critical.
Now, most people are certainly not paying any attention to that. They just go to school, go to work, and there are lights there. So what's the problem with that?
You know, the problem with that is because over time, our bodies require very specific wavelengths of light, which can be both natural and electric, as a means to support our circadian health and our overall well-being. But in order to truly understand light wellness, you must first understand the inherent nature of light. So I'm going to break it down for everyone a little scientifically here, so bear with me at first. I promise it all comes full circle. But as science has revealed, the sun's energy creates visible white light made up of short to long wavelengths between violet and red. You know, think of the rainbow, which we in the lighting world refer to these colored wavelengths as nanometers. Now, these visible wavelengths, or nanometers, fall between 380 and 780 on the sun's energy scale. And to help give you context, below 380 nanometers, we bridge into UV light, and above 780 nanometers, we bridge into radiation. So there's a very small chunk of the sun's energy that produces visible white light. Now, as we know, when you mix the radiance of all of these colored rainbow-like wavelengths together, we create a white light. And I'm sure you've noticed that some white lights look more amber or orange in nature, like older street lamps or the traditional incandescent bulbs, and others can look more greenish or blue in nature, like fluorescent or metal halide, or even, a sun at high noon. And this is because the radiant output of those wavelengths is higher than the radiant output of others. And when we apply a radiance to each nanometer in a visible white light source and chart them as points on a graph, we develop what we in the lighting world refer to as a spectral distribution curve. And you can type that into Google, and you can see exactly what I'm referring to, spectral distribution curve, or SPD. And that curve represents the radiant output of each wavelength or spectrum in what lighting professionals refer to as a color temperature, and color temperatures are based off of a Kelvin scale. And usually when you buy a light source, any lamp in any store, they're getting better about putting what that specific color temperature is, so you know what you're seeing. And when these color temperatures are paired with a general intensity or brightness, it creates what I and some other professionals are beginning to refer to as light profiles. And some light profiles are more conducive to supporting our circadian health, and others are prone to disrupt it, potentially wreaking long-term havoc on our circadian rhythms, our physiology, and our overall health.
Well, that's interesting. Now, I know there's some discussion also about signs and symptoms of a healthy, balanced circadian rhythm versus if someone has a compromised one. But I do want to tell you that we're just going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and And when we come back, we will continue our discussion with our very interesting guest today. This is Regina, and she is with LightVitalityGroup.org. So we will be right back with more right here on Progressive Radio Network on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Stay tuned.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll explore the medicinal properties of the plants of the ephedra genera, focusing on the traditional Chinese ephedra, also known as mahuang.
Many species of the plant ephedra are used today in medicine throughout the world. The most medicinal of these are ephedra sinica, or Chinese mahuang, and ephedra nevadensis, also known as Mormon tea. Most of the research on ephedra has been performed on mahuang, whose stems and branches have been used as a traditional Chinese medicine for over 5,000 years in the treatment of asthma, hay fever, bronchitis, as well as the common cold.
Ephedra species are erect evergreen shrubs which grow in segmented bamboo-like joints reminiscent of straw ending in thin wisps. They typically are desert plants preferring arid conditions on dry, rocky, and sandy slopes. The Chinese ephedra, mahuang, has earned an impressive reputation as a source of the alkaloid chemical called ephedrine. In the West, scientists became interested in the medicinal usage of mahuang after they isolated ephedrine and pseudoephedrine in 1923. Today, synthetic derivatives have become widely used in prescription and over-the-counter medications. In 1993, over 40 million prescriptions in the U.S. contained these alkaloids.
Ephedra and its relatives are considered to act pharmacologically as sympathomimetic compounds. This means that they stimulate the sympathetic part of our central nervous system, responsible for the release of adrenaline, which leads to the fight or flight response. Ephedra also affects the cardiovascular system by increasing the blood pressure and causes a relaxation and dilation of the bronchial smooth muscles in asthmatics. Ephedra can shrink the swelling of the delicate mucous membranes which line the respiratory system, thus drying up watery discharges, unstuffing clogged nasal and sinus passages, which accompany colds, sinus conditions, and allergies.
In both animal and human studies, mahuang has been shown to accelerate weight loss. It has been shown not only to suppress appetite, but to increase the metabolic activity of the adipose or fat tissue. Therefore, ephedra's weight-reducing effects are most significant in individuals who have a low metabolic rate or a sluggish thyroid gland.
Mahuang is a powerful herb which, when abused, can cause some unwanted side effects. Ephedra should not be taken by those with high blood pressure, nervousness or anxiety, insomnia, cardiac conditions, or pregnancy. Studies indicate that when used in conjunction with other Chinese herbs in a traditional formula, mahuang does not have any of these effects and has remarkable beneficial effects on human health.
We recommend consulting a healthcare practitioner knowledgeable in the use of botanical medicine before using mahuang, so you can be further educated about its totality of effects. And before using herbal preparations with mahuang, check to see if you are sensitive to its effects by starting with the minimal dose and working up to a therapeutic dose. Logically, since ephedra is a stimulant itself, it should be used prudently with other stimulants, beverages, or drugs with stimulant effects. Again, consult with your natural healthcare practitioner.
So, listeners, remember mahuang, the traditional Chinese ephedra, and make sure to include it in your natural medicine chest.
Thank you so much for joining us once again right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Get in touch. Visit naturalnurse.com. You can send us an email, or you can go to Facebook, The Natural Nurse, and send us a Facebook message. Get in touch any way you'd like. We do answer your questions. We do offer in-office consults. Dr. Eugene Samperone is with the University of Bridgeport, where there's a fabulous naturopathic clinic which is a great place to visit to start your health and wellness journey. And we do phone consults for people all over the country in terms of using natural remedies for yourself and your family. And then we have lots of classes, both for professionals with CE broker credits, and anyone can take those. If you do not have a license, so you don't need CE broker credits, you can take our classes anyway, and then you get a certificate of attendance, the fact that you did study. Some people use those towards getting, for instance, their American Herbalist Guild registered herbalist certification, which is a very, very powerful certificate to have. Or for nurses, the American Holistic Nurses Association, you can use our classes towards the coursework you need for that. Or just for your own knowledge, for yourself and your family. Today we are so happy to have as our guest Regina Lassell. Her topic for today is what's the big deal with healthy light. If you missed any part of the beginning of the program, remember all of our shows here at Progressive Radio Network, not only The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, but all the shows are archived, so you can visit back and listen to them once again. And we also have links to all our guests. For instance, Regina's association, lightvitalitygroup.org. Tell us about Light Vitality Group, Regina.
Yeah, thanks. Light Vitality Group is a designed research think tank that works to help better educate business owners and the general community about the benefits that healthy lighting plays in our life and in supporting our well-being. So we give general education, community education, and have a little bit of R&D that we're working on the side, and also perform light wellness design consultation. So it's a way to start bridging the minds that are all invested in light wellness, because their light wellness touches so many different aspects of research and of study and of industries, and all of these very unique sectors are so separate, but we're all talking about the same things. So the idea behind the group is not how we function internally as a group, but it's how we function together, across very unique and seemingly separate industries in order to create a holistic message and a voice for light wellness by bridging all of the work and the research that we do that touches all areas of circadian health and light.
So if a client wanted to get involved with the Light Vitality Group, what's the process?
They can go to lightvitalitygroup.org and go to our contact page, and there are forms that you can fill out for a variety of reasons. If you want to be a volunteer, if you want to host an education seminar, if you want to become a partner with LVG in order to help educate others so that we can create this holistic conversation and this collaborative platform for light wellness to share this message of what we all do and how we contribute. But our general email for individuals is bridge, BRIDGE, at lightvitalitygroup.org. And they can contact us through that, or they can contact me directly with my email, which is just Regina, R-E-G-I-N-A, at lightvitalitygroup.org. And I'm more than happy to answer any questions and to help people in any way that I can.
That's excellent. Well, I want to give a little story about how I use light as a professional. Many people know I'm a nurse, right, naturalnurse.com, but I'm also a teacher. And I was a teacher in certified in science, math, and Spanish. And I worked for years in classroom situations as well as in college situations. And one of the things I did was I actually, with my own money, went out and bought regular lights, and then I bought bulbs, which are full-spectrum bulbs. Mm-hmm. And I plugged them in. I actually bugged the janitors to get me extension cords so I could plug these standing lights in all around my classroom. and I kept the overhead fluorescent bulbs turned off. And that was because I had learned not only are the light waves flickering and disturbing to some people, but also there's an electromagnetic field from the ballast from one end of those fluorescents to the other, which can be very disruptive to a human electromagnetic field. And I don't know if that's what helped, but the kids in my classroom always did so much better on all the standardized tests and always were so much better in terms of being in their seats and just really seemingly to stay interested. And I got all kinds of great write-ups as a teacher, and I thought that that was really a big part of it. But I could not get the school to pay for that.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard to get people to believe in something that they seemingly can't see. I like to give the analogy of light wellness is very similar to faith. You have to believe in what you can't see. It's not easy to be able to pinpoint what type of lighting you have or what kind of energy it's putting into the room and what kind of energy you're absorbing. And you're right. There are lighting products that release small amounts of EMF or electromagnetic field energy. And certainly the flickering can be very disruptive. That has a lot to do with the type of power and kind of the hertz output that certain light sources uses. Flickering has been, or light flickering has been attributed to epileptic seizures. It can cause, a whole host of problems when our brain is trying to kind of read those light signals. The brain actually, 70% of our brain's energy is used in order to read and transform light into energy or into...
Whoa, that's a big number there, Regina. 70%?
That's a huge number. It's a huge number, and it baffles me. It blows my mind, and it's not a very well-known number or figure. I'm not sure how many of your listeners or you yourself have heard, but recently, the Nobel Prize was awarded to three scientists who have devoted their life to understanding circadian rhythms and our physiology, and some of their papers, that have come out, those are the statistics that they've put into their research and their papers. And when I was like, 70%, oh my gosh, like, that makes so much sense when people say, I'm just going to close my eyes and rest for a minute. I'm just going to rest my eyes. That actually does something because our brain is working so hard just to receive and communicate light to the rest of the body. So I thought that was a really interesting fact.
So, that is interesting because I wonder if I imagine, although it's never been looked into, that's why my students seem to do better because they had different lighting in the classroom.
Absolutely. And, full spectrum lights for a long time have been used before the advent of LEDs and the tweaking of fluorescence. Full spectrum lights were definitely used in order to treat seasonal affective disorder. And that's because full spectrum has, what it sounds like. It has a larger spectrum and a radiant output within all of those different wavelengths and nanometers, more so than a traditional incandescent lamp or halogen lamp that most facilities were using at the time. Even fluorescent lamps could have been compromising in a way. So there's definitely a lot to be said for having a full-spectrum lamp. Now, it's definitely nowadays not the end-all, be-all, and we have some really amazing products under development that we can talk about later.
Let's not talk about them later. Let's talk about them now.
Let's talk about them now.
Share that with us because I'm interested in your professional view on what lighting might be excellent and how to find it.
Yeah, absolutely. As mentioned before, I'm sure many of your listeners and you have heard of seasonal affective disorder or SAD lamps and bright light therapy devices that are used in order to treat these. Originally, these were more clinical devices, meaning if you thought you had an issue, a sleep issue or a sleeping disorder, then you could check into a sleeping clinic or any kind of medical clinic that performed any type type of bright light therapy, and you could have certain lighting levels controlled for you. Now these devices are becoming are hitting the retail market and are something that you can bring home with you. So they're very widespread across various retailers, and you can find just about anything these days now on Amazon or eBay.
Well, but what would it be called? You know, if you don't want to give brand names, that's good because this is a non-commercial show.
Yeah.
But would you have links from your website to things you recommend, or what would be a word that you would put in, let's say, to search for this kind of light?
I would put in a light therapy lamp or light therapy lighting or bright light therapy lighting. Now, not all products are created equal, and there are, you know, as mentioned, there are a host of lighting products being developed and tested and released to market to support circadian health. And these typically fall in two categories. We have a fixed white light source, meaning the light output is of one color temperature with a fine-tuned circadian spectrum. Or sometimes it's, you know, just the spectrum that we find within visible light that facilitates that circadian response, which I'll talk about in a moment. And then the second type of product is what we call a tunable white source, which a tunable white source is exactly how it sounds. It's a source which can change between color temperatures by using very specific controls. And these products can be used in anything from residential to commercial to clinical environments. But as mentioned before, they're not all created equal and shouldn't be taken for granted when marketed as a source for light wellness. And so while I don't specifically endorse one manufacturer over another, I'm at least not at this time. I'm working on that right now. But I'm more than happy to discuss which manufacturers and products I've tested specifically in a consultative setting if anyone wants to reach out through LVG. But like such, you can find these products through talking with other lighting professionals too. You can find these professionals through organizations like the Lighting Research Center out of Rensselaer Polytech Institute in Troy, New York. They have a Light and Health Alliance program, which is a great place to start. It's not always fully representative of all of the professionals and products out there making their mark on light and health. Like my organization, for instance, we're not yet a member of the Light and Health Alliance, which, you know, we hope to be one day. But the buy-in is costly, so there are only a select group of professionals represented here so far. They also have a great section on their website reviewing research-based light wellness application strategies for various types of environments.
What website is that? Because that might be a good thing for you to include on your website. You know, like they do those reviews and a chart with recommendations.
Yeah,
from what
absolutely.
You find you the best.
Yeah, I definitely reference them on my website. They are called the Lighting Research Center, and their website is LRC, like Lighting Research Center, lrc.rpi.edu. So it's the Lighting Research Center out of Rensselaer Polytech Institute, and they're an education facility with an inherent research center. So they actually perform quite a bit of the research that contributes to, you know, kind of the recommendations and the methodologies that we're seeing arise today. They perform a lot of great work with SAD and Alzheimer's patients. Specifically, they're a wonderful resource to tap into if you want to learn about light wellness.
Wow, that I never heard of them before. So that's why I love doing radio shows, because I'm always on a learning curve, and even though I was definitely into Ottlights, you might have heard about them. That's one of the older companies involved in healthy lighting many years ago. I never heard of the Lighting Research Center. Or you, and you are a fantastic resource for people to get in touch with. What's the best way to get in touch with you, Regina?
I'd say you should just either, the email regina@lightvitalitygroup.org. I think that's the easiest way. You just send me an email. You can also, you know, give me a call. The company phone number is also on the website as well.
And we're going to have that. Like I said, we archive this show. If sometimes people are driving and they can't write all this stuff down, this will be archived with links to your website and links to your email. So we're going to take another break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We'll be hearing some promos from Progressive Radio Network. You're listening to Progressive Radio Network with our show, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. There's lots of other great shows here, which you'll hear about. And when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion with Regina from Regina at LightVitalityGroup.org. And a fascinating discussion about what's the big deal with healthy light. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from Progressive Voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Are you interested in growing a greener future? Do you enjoy healthy, nutritious food? Would you like to learn how to grow your own organic oasis in an easy and efficient way? I'm Jackie Marie Beyer, the humble host of the Organic Gardener podcast, where I talk with amazing guests who are all using sustainable, earth-friendly practices. I interview backyard gardeners, market farmers, and people who have green businesses related to food. I'd love it if you'd join us on the Progressive Radio Network, coming on Monday evenings at 7 p.m.
This is Cordelia Gaffar. I'm the founder of Workout Around My Day and the Stressless Mom of Six. I have started the new Replenish Me radio show to help moms to have strategies to get through their day and to renew themselves throughout the day with little small self-care tips. And I'll be having interviews with self-love coaches, wellness coaches, just to help you. So join me Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and replenish you.
To PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We are discussing lighting and healthy lighting today with our guest, Regina. And maybe you never even knew there was so much involved with lighting. Now, we talked about school. We talked about issues like SAD and you mentioned Alzheimer's, but we didn't go into that too much. What does Alzheimer's have to do with lighting, Regina?
Right. So I think in order to talk about how Alzheimer's is being treated with light therapy, it's important to understand what the primary biofunctions of a circadian rhythm are and how they influence our overall wellness. So, to name just a few, the primary biofunctions that are regulated by our circadian rhythm are our sleep-wake cycles, our hormone management, our digestive management and our metabolism, and our immune system health and responsiveness. So the primary biofunction is our sleep-wake cycles. And all of these biofunctions are so intricately designed that they all play a vital role in supporting each other. Sleep-wake cycles influence hormone suppression and secretion, which then influences our digestion and our metabolism and our reproductive system, our cardiovascular and immune health, our cognitive strength, and our emotional mood regulation. Now, in order for us to fall asleep at night, our body must have a higher concentration of the naturally produced sleep hormone, melatonin. And in order for us to wake, we must have a regulated level of cortisol, our body's natural alertness or stress hormone. And these hormones work in an inverted balance to regulate our sleep-wake cycle. Now, we need melatonin to be released before we sleep so we can become drowsy and drift off, and we need cortisol to stimulate our body into waking up and staying alert throughout the day and cognitively stimulated. So think of it like a sine wave in mathematics or electrical engineering. In a healthy circadian rhythm, these two waves flow opposite of each other, reaching their peaks and valleys opposite of each other based on the time of day that individual's rhythm has synced to. Now, and I'm sure you could tell everyone so much more about sleep health and the importance that, you know, that has on our bodies. But, you know, all of this, now melatonin and cortisol are released from two endocrine glands, and our endocrine system is highly critical to our metabolic health and heart health and other hormone-regulated processes, which leads into our next primary biofunction, hormone management. In addition to melatonin and cortisol, our CRs, or circadian rhythms, are responsible for governing hormones such as growth hormone and the hunger hormones leptin and ghrelin, and this ties nicely into the next biofunction, which is digestive management and metabolism. Now, the hunger hormone ghrelin increases our appetite and tells the body, I'm hungry, feed me, and the hunger hormone leptin decreases appetite and tells the body, I'm stuffed, stop feeding me. Now, ghrelin also protects the cardiovascular system and stimulates...
Wait a minute. Now you're also talking about weight gain.
Yes,
exactly.
There's another
thing that's why we might be interested in light.
It's huge. That is a huge, huge aspect of it. Some of the major disorders that are associated to circadian rhythm disorders or disruption are IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, obesity, heart disease, certain cancers, and of course, diabetes and Alzheimer's. Now, Alzheimer's becomes, or actually, I just want to say that with a misaligned circadian rhythm, when we generally receive, we can generally receive shorter durations of sleep, which is associated with reduced leptin, elevated ghrelin, and an increased body mass index. And then also, it plays a key role in regulating glucose and lipid metabolisms, and the disorders of lipid and lipid protein metabolism and the transport of those are responsible for the development of a large spectrum of pathologies ranging from cardiovascular disease to metabolic syndrome and even to tumor development. And there are even certain foods that can inhibit and prohibit melatonin production. Now, this becomes very critical for sugar, blood sugar, obviously, with, you know, the glucose and the lipid metabolism and our body mass index. Now, what most people aren't aware of in this day and age is that there's a lot of research that's surfaced showing that Alzheimer's is directly located or directly associated to our blood sugar levels. And in fact, many individuals who have a very elevated blood sugar levels on a regular basis are coined preclinical Alzheimer's or type 3 diabetes. And I highly encourage everyone to research it, look up type 3 diabetes, look up preclinical Alzheimer's. And that basically is stating that where there's a certain blood sugar range that falls for type 1 diabetes, there's a certain blood sugar range that falls for type 2 diabetes, and now there is a very serious, extremely high blood sugar range that is falls for type 3 diabetes. And those who have type 3 diabetes are basically on their way to developing Alzheimer's and food.
That's a very important point.
It's so
important. That word, type 3 diabetes, has not been recognized widely in mainstream understanding, so that might be new to some of our listeners. But it does, in the professional, I just lectured at a gut-brain conference last week, and there was a lot of discussion because the brain is intimately involved with digestion. Mm-hmm. And what we eat, and that, of course, has to do with blood sugar, and people certainly recognize diabetes as being a blood sugar issue, but not so much in terms of the fact that that relates to cognitive health, and even, like you just pointed out, Regina, even is now being called type 3 diabetes is actually about developing cognitive problems and Alzheimer's. That's tremendous.
Yeah, it's huge. It's a huge breakthrough in the medical community, and it's a huge breakthrough for the lighting community, because basically Alzheimer's is plaque building up on the brain, and it's short-circuiting the neural connections. And the more we can reduce the amount of plaque that builds on our brains, like in our arteries or on our gums, the healthier we're going to be. And because circadian rhythms balance our digestive management and our metabolism and our blood sugar levels, circadian rhythms become so critical in order to help prevent and to help heal in some respects. Well, not directly heal, but to help support kind of the healing properties of Alzheimer's. And light being the primary catalyst and active agent for maintaining and balancing a mammalian circadian rhythm becomes a very critical aspect in battling diabetes and now Alzheimer's. And especially when we mentioned before the Lighting Research Center, they have a lot of great studies, case studies and reports of the types of results and conclusions that they've seen testing Alzheimer's patients and with light therapy. And it's just amazing. I highly suggest everyone to look into it.
So they saw that there was perhaps a higher degree of cognition that is available to someone if they have had light therapy?
Yes, yeah. So they started to see in these studies that average patient or guest within an assisted living facility, an elderly patient, typically only gets anywhere between, let's say, 18 to 30 minutes, 15 to 30 minutes of daylight in a day. Now, our eyes, we talked about that connection, that pathway from our eye to the brain. That happens because we have components that are within our brain, components, if you will, to help the circadian rhythm recipe. And those are non-image-forming photoreceptors in our eyes called IPRGCs and the pineal gland. Now, what I mean by non-image-forming photoreceptors is exactly how it sounds. Whereas traditional photoreceptors like rods and cones are image-forming, meaning the input is light and the output is sight, IPRGCs are intrinsically photosensitive, hence the IP and IPRGC, meaning their input is light and their output are physiological responses like hormone management and digestive management. And the pineal gland is the actual gland in the brain where melatonin, our body's natural sleep hormone, is produced and released from. So what they were noticing was that when patients are receiving more light, a longer duration of light within a very specific spectral range, because it's not all a visible white light, it's a very small chunk of visible white light.
Well, I want to stop you there, Regina, only because we're getting into some really deep and technical areas.
Okay.
But we're at the end of our time.
Okay.
I do want to thank you so much for enlightening us as a pun, to the really, really important aspects that people don't pay attention to. And I really would like people to know how to get in touch with you. Let's go off with that. And so they can continue learning how they can integrate light into their life to improve their health and wellness.
Yeah. So, please, everyone can reach out through the Light Vitality Group website, lightvitalitygroup.org. We have a community-driven research campaign called White Light Just Right with a separate website called whitelightjustright.com. And there are contact details on both of those websites, and you're welcome to reach us through our social media efforts called, on Instagram, it's White Light Just Right, and on Twitter, it's underscore WLJR for White Light Just Right. And, of course, you can always contact me directly through through the LVG phone line or at regina@lightvitalitygroup.org. And I'm happy to continue the conversation about Alzheimer's and, you know, the results that we saw out of these studies and even the more technical aspects, the less technical aspects, anything anyone wants to know, that's what LVG is here for. We're here to help you.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being our guest. And until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse at naturalnurse.com, hoping that you stay healthy.
Thank you, Ellen.